Jovan Buha. Buha.
Yo, yo. I'm Jovan Buha. I'm a reporter and analyst for Buha's Block. And welcome to another live show. On today's episode, we're going to be discussing what is next for the Lakers after making several of their moves official. We had discussed why it made sense for LA to hold off on several moves and them trying to figure out a way to clear some additional cap space, dump some contracts, and get some more flexibility. That has not happened up to this point. It is technically still possible, which I will get into, but the Lakers have officially acquired Walker Kessler. The trade has gone through, and it has gone through as is. It has gone through as it was agreed to. They did not expand the trade. They did not add in a third team, fourth team. They did not loop in Jonathan Kuminga to expand the trade. So the trade goes through as is. Lakers acquire Walker Kessler, send out two firsts and two first-round swaps. So the natural question is, what is next for the Lakers? They remain on Jonathan Kuminga watch. This is, I guess, we're a week into it. It's like day eight of Kuminga watch, basically, since the Lakers did their first flurry of moves. Now, technically, the Lakers can still create cap space and sign Jonathan Kuminga up until they do the Sexton and Reeves moves, because once they do the Sexton move, they will be going using the room exception, and then the Austin move fully puts them above the cap, where it's really difficult at that point to create any cap space. So the Lakers still have a window here. They have not officially signed Colin Sexton to the room exception. They have not re-signed Austin Reeves. They have a little bit of time here to see if they can dump some additional salary in the form of Jared Vanderbilt, Delta Connect, Jaden Hardy. One note on Hardy can still be aggregated in a trade because he was acquired with cap space. So there's been a lot of misinformation out there in terms of Jaden Hardy can't be traded or Jaden Hardy can't be aggregated in a trade because the Lakers acquired him using cap space, or had cap space when they acquired him. They can still reroute Jaden Hardy immediately. There's no 60-day period with him. So they can trade him right now. They could trade him tomorrow. Technically, like with how things have played out and with the way that they welcomed him, it just the way the press release was, like it does seem like the Lakers are intent on keeping Jaden Hardy. So I feel like at this point, with the intel that I have and with the way that the market is shaping up right now, it feels like it's going to be them trying to get off Jared Vanderbilt and or Dalton Connect. Ideally, I think for them both. And then they're probably keeping Jake LaRavia, probably keeping Jaden Hardy, and then Bronny, I think it's TBD, depending on where LeBron goes. But technically, the Lakers can still create cap space, and with that cap space, sign somebody, including Jonathan Kuminga, or execute a sign and trade into that cap space. So until they do those final couple moves, that door is cracked open. So I just wanted to acknowledge that. But most likely, with the way things have been trending, with the way things have been developing, the most likely outcome for the Lakers here is my version of moves, which I will pull up here in terms of like, so the most likely outcome for LA is, as we see here, they've already traded DeAndre Ayton to the Wizards. They've signed Quentin Grimes and Mamu. They've acquired Kessler. They've done the first three steps. I added an additional step here because of Kevon Looney. But the next steps would be sign Sexton, re-sign Reeves, sign Looney on a vet minimum exception, and then trade for the starting wing. And that could even be a sign-in trade. But remember, there are certain salary matching rules that the Lakers would be operating under. So I think this is the most likely way that this is going to play out if the Lakers decide to trade for a starting forward, including Kuminga. I think it will probably be a sign-in trade, and it'll just come down to the haggling on both Kuminga's contract and what is the package for Kuminga, what is the draft capital being sent out, who are the players being sent out. And I want to give a big shout out to friend of the show, most frequent guest on the show, Kobe Price of the California Post, who had a huge report today updating the Kuminga situation. And he reported that Atlanta is open to trading Jonathan Kuminga to the Lakers in a sign-in trade with the framework being Jared Vanderbilt and the Lakers 2032 first round swap. Now, I've heard the Lakers are reluctant to give up that swap and are reluctant to give up that swap in that specific deal. I'm on the side of, I think if you can get off Vando for just a first round swap and retain those 3 second round picks and get a starting level forward back, that to me is a no-brainer. The one caveat here, and I think it's a noteworthy caveat, is that if you are sign and trading for a player, that player or that contract has to be a 3-year deal. Now, technically, only the first year has to be guaranteed. So you could do something like a team option on year two or a team option on year three, player option, whatever. Knowing the Lakers, it's probably going to be a player option, but it would have to be at least a 3-year deal for Kuminga. The max they could do is, I guess because it'd be bird rights, I think they could do a 5-year deal because they have not rescinded his rights. So I think realistically, it'd probably be a 3-year deal. But only maybe the Lakers go 4 to just kind of match everyone on the same timeline, but like probably a 3 or 4 year deal. And then I think they would look for some flexibility there where if the salary goes up a bit, I think you maybe look at trying to get Kuminga on a team option there in like year 3 or whatever. If the salary is a little bit lower, that's where maybe you give him the carrot of the player option of, okay, we'll have you a little bit lower for the first couple of years, but we'll give you a player option where if you really pop, you rehab your league-wide value, you really show what you could do in a winning environment, okay, then you have that leverage to test the market, and obviously we can still re-sign you. So I think that framework to me makes a ton of sense from the Lakers side. I'm pretty surprised by it from the Atlanta side. I feel like that's a bad trade for Atlanta, but they apparently are higher on Jared Vanderbilt than most of the rest of the league. And so if that's really the framework, I think the Lakers have to seriously consider that, again, with the caveat that it depends on what the Kuminga deal is. So I will bring up the trade rules here. And I think this is noteworthy because we can look at this framework of if the Lakers are sending out anything in the $8.8 million range or below, they can take back double the salary plus $250,000. So for example, Jaden Hardy is on a $6 million contract. If the Lakers send out just Jaden Hardy, they could take back a player making up to $12.25 million, which would be double his salary plus that $250,000. If the player is making between $8.8 million and a dollar to $29 million, they can add up to $9.1 basically million on top of that. So for example, Jared Vanderbilt making $12.4 million. If you send out Vando, you can roughly bring back $21.5 million in a trade. So Vando's technically making like, I think it's like $12,428,000 something. So roughly in that $21.5 million range, which I think is noteworthy because my understanding is Kuminga does want something above that $15 million and probably closer to that $20 million. So I think that's another haggle point here of what is that number going to end up? Is it going to be like if I'm the Lakers, I'm trying to keep that below $15 million, maybe 15 at the most, especially if you're committing to a 3 or 4 year deal, unless you're getting the team option on that. Again, if you're going a little bit higher, I think you have to push for a team option, a non-guarantee, something to give yourself some leverage with the situation just not working out potentially. Because if you're going like 20 million, you know, 3 year, $60 million deal, with a player option on year three, like there's a ton of risk baked into that contract for the Lakers. And I would understand why they would be a little reticent to give that swap up, even if it means getting off of Vando. So I think it's really going to come down to the structure of that potential sign and trade with Kuminga and what's that number. I think if you're the Lakers, you're trying to keep it $15 million or below. I mean, $10 million, $12 million would be great. If you go up to 14, 15, I think you could, like, that's mid-level money, a 3-year deal, and maybe even a 2+1 where you have the team option in year three. That's like a win for the Lakers. If you're going 2+1 with Kuminga player option and you're going above the 15, that's where I start to think it's more of a player friendly contract and fits more with what Kuminga wants. So I think that's the big haggle point right now, is like, what's that final number going to be? How many years is it going to be? 3 years, 4 years? Is it a 2+1, 3+1, just 3 years flat, 4 years flat, whatever? There's a ton of variations to that potential contract.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Looking for a simpler way to explore medical weight loss options? Orderly Meds connects you online with licensed healthcare providers so you can learn about GLP-1 treatment options from home. It's convenient, straightforward, and designed to fit your lifestyle. Get started today at orderlymeds.com/podcasts. That's orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Again, orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Results may vary. Consult a licensed healthcare provider to determine if treatment is appropriate for you. Restrictions apply.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
But I think that's the big thing right now is going to be like, if I'm the Lakers, like, and I understand why the Lakers would be hesitant to give up that first round swap. It is technically the last first round pick they could trade for a while. At the on draft day 2028, they will have access to their 2035 pick. So 2027, you get access to 2034. 2028, you get access to 2035. So draft day 2028, the Lakers will have access to that 2035 pick and be able to flip that. So like the notion that I think a lot of people are running with, oh, the Lakers have no tradable first round picks over the next 7 years. That's factually incorrect. They have three first round picks that they have access to. Just two of those are swaps. So it's a little bit more complicated trading those. And obviously with the Stepien rule, they can't trade those until draft day. And then they have the 2032 pick that they own entirely, but they could do a pick swap with that. And then again, you're similar with the Stepien rule because they've traded 2031 and 33. They can't trade that 2032 outside of a swap. But technically, the Lakers will have access to those picks on draft day once they have an idea of where that pick is. And then they could determine whether they want to trade it or not. And then again, also starting in 2028 with that draft, they will have access to the 2035 pick. So it's not 7 straight years of LA not being able to trade any of their picks or not having access to any of these future first round picks. They will get access to the picks that they have, which are three on the day of the draft. And that will be post pick swap potentially and figuring out like where their pick is. And then again, starting in 2028, they will start to get access to the future picks where 2028, you get 2035, 2029, you get 2036. So they'll have some more flexibility there with picks and swaps. We are talking 2 years from now. So it is going to be a bit, I'm not denying that. And that 2027 pick is 1 through 4 protected. So unless the Lakers have a disaster season this year and end up in the lottery and get a top four pick, which might be nice from like a draft asset perspective, barring that, they are giving that pick up in 2027. So yes, the Lakers are depleted from an asset perspective. Like overall, they're not the Thunder or the Jazz or one of these teams, but they will have access to first round picks to make to make selections and also trade them. And then they'll also be getting those picks starting within the next couple of years. But I think a big thing here is going to be ultimately, what does the Kuminga contract look like? That to me is the biggest remaining factor here of if LA is actually willing to do the deal. Now, a little bit of additional context on the JK situation, to my understanding, is that the Lakers pitched him early on being a part of this next iteration of the team. And behind Austin and behind Walker Kessler, he was right there in terms of a priority for them. But they did end up pivoting toward Quentin Grimes and Mamu and have now circled back and are trying to find a way to make it work with Jonathan Kuminga. But obviously the money's pretty tight. Like right now, they have made the offer for the veteran minimum. he's not going to sign the veteran minimum, even if he is going to be a starter. They've tried to find ways to clear a little bit more cap space and you know, make a more aggressive offer, but it's still somewhere in that single digits or upwards of $10 million. I think it's going to take more than that for him to agree to the sign and trade. Because remember, a sign and trade is not just the team sends you out, you have to agree to it. So Jonathan Kuminga has to be on board with it. And I do think it's probably going to be, I would guess at least a three-year $36 million deal, three-year $40 million deal would be probably the lowest that would potentially be agreed to. And then it you know, going up from there, where I'm sure he would want 3 years 60 or something like that with like a player option in year three. And I think how you know, where those sides settle is that 345, 350, somewhere in between, I think like the baseline versus the highest, like, we'll see in terms of where, you know, if they find common ground or not, and they might not. And the Lakers might just say, hey, we don't feel comfortable giving you a 3 year contract, especially at 15 plus million, 18 plus million, whatever. And so we'll give you a 1 year guarantee or, you know, maybe a 2 year guarantee, but we're not guaranteeing the third year, or we are insisting on a team option that third year. Right. So there's different ways they could haggle on that. But I think, again, the big thing here is going to be the contract and what the Lakers are able, you know, are interested in offering, and then what's the lowest Kuminga is willing to accept. And if those two things align, I think this happens. If they don't, then either the price was too high for the Lakers or the price was too low for Kuminga. And I think that's how this ends up playing out. And then final thing before we get into the Q&A is just Kobe also had a nugget in there that I think is notable. In terms of that, he reported the price from the Lakers' perspective for PJ Washington is too high, and not even the price of what it would cost to get him, which almost certainly will be higher than what it would cost to get Kuminga, but the actual price of his contract with 4 years and $88 million remaining. And I was surprised by that. And I also vehemently disagree with that assessment from the Lakers' perspective, just because PJ Washington is better than Quentin Grimes and Mamu, and he's also fitting this timeline of the Luka, Austin, and younger group of, he's 27. He's about to be 28 in August, so he's a little bit on the older side. He'd be the second oldest rotation guy or second oldest starter behind just Austin. You know, technically Looney's in there, but we'll see how heavily he actually factors into the rotation. But PJ Washington is on the timeline. He's locked up for 4 years. So he also fits with you're trying to get everyone on the same timeline in terms of like the contracts. Well, you have Austin and Kessler and Grimes and Mamu on 4 year deals. Luka will, you know, potentially sign an extension at some point coming up here in the next year or so. And, you know, that'll be a longer term deal. But otherwise, like, you kind of have that core locked up. If you add PJ Washington into that with his 4 year, $88 million deal, like, I think that makes a ton of sense. And you would walk out of this offseason with two starters and three high level bench guys, with one of those guys in Grimes being able to be a placeholder starter for the time being, and maybe he grows into being a full-time starter. Like, the Lakers are on some level making that bet, but I part of me wonders if this is public posturing, right? And you'll see when teams are in negotiations, especially around right now, it's smokescreen season. There's well, that price is too high, we don't want to give up that for that player, or, well, that price is too low, we're not going to give up that player for that, right? And you see it on both sides with the team. Like, the team in the Lakers position is going to say, well, we don't want that contract, right? And then the team in Dallas's position is going to be like, well, the Lakers are, their offer's underwhelming, they're not offering enough, we want the 3 seconds and the swap, even if they would accept less than that, right? So I think there probably is some level of haggling here, and it might not just be an outright no for the Lakers in terms of potentially acquiring PJ Washington. But that, to me, if you can get PJ Washington and it potentially doesn't cost all of your draft capital, I would do that. Like, I think that would be a home run for the offseason. And walking out of the offseason with Kessler, Washington, a potential opening there for the point of attack guy, though again, that could end up being Grimes long term, and then Austin and Luka, that to me would be like as good of a realistic offseason as the Lakers could have had, factoring in losing LeBron, right? Like, you know, LeBron could right now sign for the minimum or whatever with the Lakers if things were in a different place. And that would be an awesome addition on a minimum contract. And like, he'd fit, I think, great with this roster. But like, barring that, which I don't think was going to happen with obviously with how things played out, and I just didn't see LeBron staying for a minimum. Like, if you get PJ Washington locked in as a four-year guy and he's still in that 27, 28 age range and on the same timeline as Austin and Luka, like, I just think that makes a ton of sense, even if the price is higher than Jonathan Kuminga. I think PJ Washington is a proven commodity, more of a proven commodity on both sides of the ball. You've seen that he can be that primary wing stopper on a team that makes the finals, right? And he was trading that off with Derrick Jones Jr., but Derrick Jones Jr. is more of a point of attack guy. PJ Washington was guarding more of the bigger wings and forwards. And you look at his defensive data, he is elite on that end. You know, so elite might be strong. I'll say somewhere between, like, his numbers are elite or somewhere between great to elite. I would say he's probably a good defender. I wouldn't go as far to say like great or elite, but like, I think a good defender, really good rebounder. That's the underrated part to me of PJ Washington, is that especially in comparison with a lot of the guys he's being compared to in that general range of like a starting forward, he's the best rebounder of anyone that has been linked to the Lakers. Like, if you're looking at him versus Kuminga, him versus Christian Brown, him versus Cam Johnson, Lou Dort, Max Strus, any of these guys, even Derrick Jones Jr., like, PJ Washington is just a straight up better rebounder than any of those guys. So I think that would be an important addition. The shot obviously can come and go, and he's probably closer to being like an average-ish shooter, which you'd like to see that, you know, and bounce back and have like a career year, close to a career year playing off of Luka and Austin. But, you know, with that aside, I think he's a big game player. I think there's a proof of concept there. I think the defense, the rebounding, the versatility, he can play in small ball looks. He can play in bigger looks. He can play either the three or the four, but I think even in, again, some of those smaller looks, he could go at the five, or you're going a do at the five or something like that. Like, there's different ways to use him that I think are really enticing. And my read right now would be that's more posturing than anything, but if the Lakers legitimately are viewing that four-year, $88 million deal as just too egregious, I would disagree with that assessment. I think it would properly slot a lot of the guys in the rotation, where Grimes would go from being the fourth most important guy to the fifth most important guy. I think that's a far better slotting for Grimes. It would also take some pressure off of him defensively. And again, you know, compared to Kuminga, I mean, Kuminga will probably be cheaper in terms of contract and probably be cheaper in terms of draft capital, but there's a ton of uncertainty there. And it is a gamble, that there is some risk there. PJ Washington is a known and proven commodity. So, and he's still young enough where, you know, I feel like people talk about him like he's 29, 30, 31, like he's 27, about to be 28. I would do that in a heartbeat if I'm the Lakers, depending on what the price is. Now, is it the full draft capital? Then you really have to think about that. That is limiting your flexibility in the future. But if you walk out of the offseason with PJ Washington and Walker Kessler as locked in starters, and then Grimes, Mamu, and Sexton as your top three bench players, and over the next year, your goal is to get that final starter, or maybe Grimes grows into that role, and then now you're looking for that final bench piece to replace Grimes, like, that is a really good place to be in. Whereas right now, I think they're missing at least one starter, if not two. And that's a pretty big hole that maybe they fill with Jonathan Kuminga. Maybe they try to fill on the minimum market. I think that would be a mistake. Matisse Thybulle, Zaire Williams, Ochai Agbaji, those guys I think can potentially be rotation guys on a good team. I do not view any of those guys as starters. And Zaire Williams, they had a $6 million team option. Like, the Nets need talent. If the Nets really viewed him as that type of guy, I don't see why they would decline that team option. Like, you don't let cheap young talent go for nothing. And especially on like a, you know, relatively team friendly contract. So like, I think he's more of a minimum level player, and it's just rare to pluck a minimum level player off of the free agent market that a team just gave up on, that is desperately needs his skill set and theoretical talent, and like plug that guy in and be like, all right, you're an every night 28, 30 minute and a night starter. Like, I just don't see that. So based on the current intel, like, I think Kuminga is by far the most likely of anybody. We don't even know if PJ Washington, if the Mavericks would trade him to the Lakers, right? It just was notable that was reported that the Lakers aren't interested in it. And again, it could be a hardball negotiation thing, but Kuminga to me is the most likely. It just comes down to the final price in terms of the trade, what the Lakers are sending out. If they, maybe the Lakers negotiate this where it's like 2 seconds instead of the swap or something. Maybe they value it that way. But then also the biggest thing of all is going to be Kuminga's contract. And is it a 3-year deal, 4-year deal? What's the structure with it? And then what's the AAV? I think if you're the Lakers, it's got to be 15 or lower. If you're Kuminga, you're pushing above 15, trying to get that into the high teens or you know, close to 20. So again, I think that'll be a negotiation that plays out here in the next day or two. And the big thing will be if the Lakers end up doing the Sexton and Reeves signings, then the one way to do this, to bring this back, will be trading for Kuminga with the trade rules. So again, you could do Jared Vanderbilt for in the swap for Kuminga on any contract above, I mean, you could even do below Vando's contract, but like basically any number that does not exceed 21.5 million in terms of the single year starting out. So you could do Vando for Kuminga on a 3-year $45 million deal, 3-year $60 million deal. Like there's different variations that would fit, as long as it's under 21.5 in terms of the starting salary for the first year, it would work with Vanderbilt. Now, technically, you could also add in Dalton Connect and expand that. So if you add in Connect, who's making, I believe it's like 4.2 or something in that range, now you're boosting that to, you're almost at, you know, nearly 17 million. It might be a little bit more than 4.2. You're almost at 17 million. And now you could still go that 9.1 above. So you could pay Jonathan Kuminga even more. Or if Atlanta wanted to try to add someone, I think you could take someone back as well, though I'm not sure off the top of my head the sign-in trade aggregation rules. I would have to look that up. But you're just kind of pointing out some different options for the Lakers. If they wanted to go above that 21.5, I doubt they do. I'm almost certainly positive they will not. But I think the most straightforward thing here would be Vanderbilt plus some form of draft capital. You get Kuminga back. And if you're the Lakers, again, you're trying to keep that as close to a $15 million AAV as possible. And also try to see if you can get a non-guarantee, a team option, something like that. If you're Kuminga, you're fighting to push that above 15 and get the player option. So we'll see how that plays out potentially over the next day or two. If the Lakers do the Sexton and Reeves signings soon here, that means that they will operate above the cap. If they don't and they continue to delay, that means they're potentially looking to get under the cap, create more space, and then potentially just sign Kuminga. Because that would be the most straightforward way. It would be maybe you just dump. You could, I mean, it depends, because I think they're in a unique situation here with Vando, where if the price for Vando is just the swap, I don't know if anyone else will take Vando on for just the swap. I'm pretty surprised by how low that price is. So it still might end up being the best situation where you just do the sign and trade rather than trying to dump Vando or dump Hardy and Connect and then use the cap space in that case. Like, maybe you can theoretically save the, you know, maybe you do a second. It's like Dalton, Hardy in a second, and you clear 10 point whatever, and then you sign Kuminga into that. I feel like that's a little low. I don't think he's going to accept that low. I'd be pretty surprised, but that's like maybe the alternate where you save more draft capital and you also clear another roster spot and you just have a little bit more flexibility. But if there's a way to get off Vando and only give up one of your four draft assets, I think the Lakers should do that. And I think it's been that difficult of a contract for them to move that if they have a team now who's potentially looking to take it on for whatever reason and is okay with that. And I mean, it makes some sense for Atlanta. Like they, in theory, you know, they're going smaller a bit with some of their, like they have a switch heavy scheme. I think Vando can fit into that. And if I'm not mistaken, he has played for Quinn Snyder. I could be wrong on that, but I think his time in Utah might've overlapped with Quinn Snyder. So maybe Quinn Snyder's a fan. I think if the Hawks will take it, I think you have to bite at that. I just think that's too good to pass up based on how cold the Vando market has been and how he still has an extra year. But again, we shall see how this all plays out, and we'll be covering it all until there's a resolution. But overall, the Lakers have made several moves official. Quentin Grimes and Mamu
have been signed. Walker Kessler has been acquired. Jaden Hardy has been acquired. And now they are on the clock here with fighting that starting forward. And we'll see what they do. We'll see if they finalize the Sexton, Reeves, and Looney moves within the next 24 to 48 hours, if they pull the trigger on this potential Jonathan Kuminga trade, or if they surprise us with a PJ Washington, Derek Jones Jr., or someone else that we haven't even discussed. But shout out to the chat. Shout out to the late night gang. Appreciate you all. I will be traveling tomorrow, so unlikely I do anything tomorrow other than Lakers Collective at 10 a.m. We're moving it from 11 a.m. to 10 a.m. But shout out to the chat. For those watching on YouTube, please be sure to hit that subscribe button, turn on channel notifications, and like and comment on this video. On the road to 40,000 subscribers by the end of the month, would mean the world if you hit that subscribe button. I really appreciate it. And for those listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice, please be sure to follow, download, and leave a 5-star review. I'll be back on Friday on here, on Thursday on Lakers Collective. I will talk to you all then.